and welcome again to the Strange Brew podcast. My name's Jason Barnard, and that was Billy Morrison with Ozzy Osbourne and Crack Cocaine. That's one of the highlights of his new album, The Morrison Project, which he undertook with a range of fantastic artists. On this show, we'll be talking not only about his collaborations with Ozzy, but his time playing with The Cult, Billy Idol, and much more. So let's hear my chat with Billy.
Hey, Jason, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. Pleasure to see you.
Beautiful. Nice to see you.
I've loved listening to the Morrison Project. You've got different voices and collaborations, and it keeps things fresh across the whole album. From the outset, was it your concept to work with a range of different artists?
Not at all. From the outset, I didn't even know I was making a record. All I was doing was what most creatives do during COVID. When you get locked down, is I have a studio in my house. So I was just sitting there throwing random beats and EDM samples and metal guitars with no concept of finishing a song or putting an album together. When it became apparent that I had some good stuff, I sang on a bunch of them. And then I got to some songs where, in order to serve the song, rather than my ego, it was very clear to me that I needed to ask some friends. It was never, I'm going to get some famous people and put a record out, ever.
I mean, in particular, Ozzy Osbourne on Crack Cocaine, that song has blown up. It's a real calling card for the record. How did you get Ozzy involved on that track?
Well, I mean, look, me and Ozzy have been best friends for 30 years. And like most best friends, we don't sit around talking about music all the time. We're probably talking about what we're going to have for dinner and stuff like that. But Steve Stevens, who I've been in a band with for 16 years, we wrote that riff just sitting around. We had the detuned guitars, the Aussie tuned guitars, and we were messing around. And between us, we came up with that riff. And that at that point was clear. I could sing it, but it needed to be Ozzy Osbourne. And as luck would have it, you know, Ozzy's my best friend. So I called him up. I went, you need to come round. We've got this riff. He came round. And then the three of us in the room. And Jason, I can't stress enough, no egos. You know, we all know each other so well that we weren't trying to be, yeah, but this is my chord or this is my lyric. We wrote the song together. And I think that's what happens when true friendship writes some music as opposed to business partners.
It's classic Ozzy. The sound of the record, not only the vocals, the guitars, it's got that sort of 90s heavy sound to it.
Yeah. I mean, Steve Stevens will tell you, because we didn't know, again, we didn't sit down and go, we're writing a hit song for Ozzy. We picked up a couple of really cheap $500 guitars and dropped the tuning and didn't pay much attention to what we were writing it on. And that's the sound. That's the sound of that song. It wasn't overproduced and it wasn't, let's craft some magical vehicle for Ozzy to sing. It was three guys in a room going, yeah, this is a cool riff. This sounds like 90s Ozzy. Great. And it ended up Sharon calling me going, this is a great song. You got to put it on the album.
How does that compare with Gods of Rock and Roll, which you did in the last decade with Ozzy? Because that's a more reflective song. Was it a different process for that song?
It was slightly different because Gods was written in a hotel room in Argentina on an acoustic. Ozzy had texted me and said, I've got a great lyric. So I came out of my room and went to his room, grabbed an acoustic, and it's only four chords, that verse. But the vibe of me and Ozzy at probably 1 a.m. round a table in a hotel in Argentina, it became much more introspective, melancholy. And that song was written, me and him, acoustic and his lyric. Whereas this started with a pretty well-defined demo that me and Steve had put together before Ozzy came round and did his Ozzy Osbourne thing, which is amazing to watch. I mean, the guy took 20 minutes to sing it.
Wow.
Yeah. People, you know, they're reporting, oh, Ozzy's frail and Ozzy's this and Ozzy's that. Well, like any person, he's going through some health stuff. But when he came around to sing that song, it took him about 20 minutes. There's a difference between a rock star and an icon. And Ozzy's an icon. And when the on switch, when the light goes on, man, that guy can sing.
I found myself another gushing.
And then on your new album as well, there's Drowning, which is one of the other key tracks. And the lyrical theme of that is interesting. It seems to hit a chord with the discordance with what's going on in the world at the minute.
Yeah, look, I'm sure a lot of people wrote songs about how they were feeling during COVID. It was a great time for being a creative because you didn't have to look far for inspiration. And for me, I was drowning in information. I was locked up like we all were, and the TV was on like we all had it on, trying to find, first of all, what's going on? How long is it going to last? How do we combat it? And every day, both sides of the political spectrum would come on and say, we've got the solution, wear a paper mask. And then the next day we know that's not working. You got to take a vaccine. Oh, not that vaccine, this vaccine. So it was more an observation of how the information overload was making me feel. I felt like I was drowning in misinformation, quite frankly.
On that track as well, it's got a great guitar work from yourself, and you're known as a rhythm guitarist,
but
that's
you.
That track's a showcase to what you can really do in more of a lead sound.
Yeah, I have to stop. I've spent years saying I'm a rhythm guitar player, I'm a rhythm guitar player. I have to stop that because, again, not being bound by the constraints of knowing you're making a record and just being in your own studio, there's a lot of leads on the album that I ripped out. And clearly, apparently, I can play lead guitar as well. I mean, I would never have done that if I'd have been paid by a record company and you're sitting down. But what did I have to lose? And so, yeah, a lot of the solos that I did ended up being first takes. You know, I just was messing around. And there's something to be said for that sense of freedom when you're writing and playing. So I'm grateful to this record for bringing me out as a lead guitar player.
Trying.
How did you choose the right artist for the right song, whether it was yourself on vocals for some tracks and then, you know, a real range of other artists on many of the others?
It's a great question. And again, it was about serving the song. And each song has a reason. The Aussie song was purely because it was an undeniable Aussie riff with the pinched harmonics and the detuned. It had to be Aussie. The Al Jurgensen song was deliberately, it was actually Al wrote it to a Ministry riff that I had written for Ministry that never got used. So that was clearly going to be Al Jurgensen. Hip hop, I mean, I'm a huge hip hop fan, and I had the hip hop beat going on. Well, I happened to have a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer's phone number in my phone, so it was always going to be DMC. Linda Perry, I wrote that song in its entirety, the music, the melody, the lyrics, and it's very Bowie. And me and Linda share a love of Bowie, so I called the people that seemed to serve the song the best.
Chasing Shadows, that's the track with Linda Perry. I mean, that is a fantastic track. Tell us a bit more about that. So you were saying there's a bit of a Bowie feel to that.
Yeah, I'll tell you the story behind that, because first of all, Linda doesn't do this very much. If you look around, I mean, she's too busy winning Grammys for writing songs for other people. And she's one of the most successful songwriters of our generation. And she doesn't pop up on many people's solo albums. But Linda has been, I've known her for decades, and she's been a wonderful friend. And I had a version of this song. Like I say, I wrote it all. So there is a version of this song with me singing it, because I had to communicate how the lyrics and melody went. And I sent it to Linda. She said, you know what? I do love you. Let me hear the song. And I expected her to say, okay, well, come over. We'll deconstruct it. We've got to change this, that, just, you know. And what she texted back was, this is a perfect song. I don't want to change a thing, which as a songwriter is probably the highest accolade. And she didn't change anything. I sent her the song, she sang on it and sent it back.
It could be me. Who knows the truth? What kind of game is this we play? Another stairway leads to nowhere. I'm lost inside your world, and our communication fails again. I try to understand. The truth is in our hands, but every word is colored by the past. So are we meant to be, when one and one makes three? Or are we chasing shadows in the dark? You can see, is this all that it could be? What a way to live our lives. A new beginning if we choose, or a different way to lose, depends upon your point of view. I try to understand. The truth is in our hands, but every word is covered by the past. So are we meant to be, when one and one makes three? Are we chasing shadows in the dark? That's true. truth is in our hands, but every word is colored by the past. So are we meant to be when one and one makes three? Are we chasing shadows in the dark?
One of your key influences, the Sex Pistols, and you can hear that in the sound of the guitars or even in the construction of the songs. The Pistols, great songwriters.
Yeah.
Tell us about that influence.
You know, look, people, they were very angry and, you know, upset a whole nation quite confusingly, actually. I mean, all they did was swear on TV, but, oh, dear, you know, they're coming for your children. But ultimately, they wrote the greatest pop songs on the planet. Verse, chorus, verse, chorus. The choruses were big, sing along. And I will never not be able to get that influence out of me. That's where I learned about powerful melody, power chords, the succinct structure of a 3.5 minute song that gets to the point and has a chorus that makes you scream it when you're driving down the freeway, you know. So obviously, I've said this in other interviews, I clearly do Angry Boy quite well. You know, I wouldn't say I have the pipes of an angel, but I can definitely do Angry Boy. So those were the songs that I sang and the construction of them. Sure. A lot of it is about melody. It's about knowing which chords go together and how powerful you can make it. And there's tricks when you record guitars that I stole from Steve Jones of how to make those power chords sound like they do on that record.
And you've come back to some of that Pistol stuff like Pretty Vacant with Royal Machines and quite a number of projects that you've done, haven't you?
Yeah, one of the greatest musical moments of my life. Royal Machines affords me the opportunity to share a stage with other musicians that I respect and love. And I was only talking to Mark McGrath the other day about one of the greatest musical moments in both of our careers is Paul Cook on drums, Glenn Matlock on bass, Steve Jones and me on guitar, and Mark McGrath singing Pistols songs. It's like, we're on stage with the Pistols. Tell that to a 12-year-old me, you know.
Only one way to close tonight's festivities, and that's, of course, with a little Sex Pistols.
were on bass with the Cult for at least a year. Was that a case of Billy Duffy linking up with you and trying to get you involved?
Yeah, it was a couple of years, and Duffy's known me since my drug days. He knew me way back in the 80s, and they needed a bass player, and he asked me if I wanted to audition, which, you know, I did audition, and I got the job. And, you know, I'm not a bass player. And for years, decades, in fact, or anything anyone wrote about me said, bass player Billy Morrison, which is kind of frustrating because I've had a 16-year career as Billy Idol's guitar player. But, you know, playing bass for the Cult, it's not Jaco Pastorius. It's not that hard. You've just got to have a sense of rhythm. And Duffy said, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. So he encouraged me, and it put me into arenas and stadiums, which I am forever grateful for.
And you've had a remarkable life and story, and you've had difficult times, including with drugs. How did you make that shift from not being in a good place and not being the best person that you felt that you could be to becoming the best person that you could be?
You know, it's not really my doing. I think there's a universe out there that helped me along my way. And it was a moment, literally a flash of realization that it wasn't going to end well. For 15 years, I thought I was Superman. And yeah, I was living homeless and all that stuff that I've spoken about. But I was granted a moment of clarity where I realized this is going to end in like a really gruesome death or doing life. And from that point onwards, you asked how. Hard work. Hard work. People think that doing what I do is fairly easy and that you swan around. And, you know, I'm grateful for every moment of it, but I've worked hard for, you know, 29 years now. I've worked hard to get where I am.
So how did you link up with Steve Stevens and playing rhythm with Billy Idol then?
Steve, we had Royal Machines. It used to be called Camp Freddy. Same band, different name. Because Steve lived in LA. And musicians, you know, you meet people out. And Steve had gotten up with us a few times as a guest. And I got a phone call from Steve saying, do you want to play guitar in Billy Idol's band? And, you know, apparently they'd taken quite a long break and they were coming back with the big comeback album and the big world tour. And Steve had said to Billy, we've only ever had one guitar and it holds me back as a lead player. I want to do the Malcolm Young, Angus Young thing. And Billy, he was clever enough to say yes. And the band, I think, sounds really good these days. And I've been afforded the opportunity to grow as a guitar player. You have to. Standing on a stage with Steve Stevens, you better get good really quick, you know?
What is that British community like in LA? Do you guys link up? Do you kind of see a bit of a connect? There's a lot of, yeah. There's a lot of you that have come over.
Oh, yeah. We all meet up for coffee every morning. No, there is a lot of Brits. We all know each other, and there are certain events where we'll all be there, and it's nice. But it's just the same as anywhere in the world. There's a lot of Americans living in London, let's face it. You know,
yeah.
There was a football community when Robbie Williams lived here, because he, you know, he was able to have a football pitch in his back garden, but I wasn't a soccer player. But, you know, I hang out with Jonesy 2 or 3 days a week, and Duffy when he's here. It's the same as if I worked in a bank and I guess all the finance guys go to a particular wine bar after work and talk shop. It's the same if you're in the music business, you know.
How long have you been making art? Because you're a very respected artist.
Thank you. About 11 years now. I've always loved art, as you can see from what you're looking at.
Yeah.
My house is surrounded with Andy Warhols and Basquiat's and all that shit. I've always put my money into other people's art, but Ozzy was the guy that persuaded me that I could actually do it, because I left school at a very early age, never went to art class, never showed any inclination to draw or sketch, but he convinced me, and you know, he regrets it ever since, because he's watched me blow up as a fine artist, and he says, I'm never suggesting anything again for you.
Go at 7 and never.
You mentioned Ozzy again. You've got some other podcasts and projects with Ozzy coming up, don't you?
Yeah. Well, they've formed Osborne Media House because basically, you know, they've done a lot of content over the years, and those kind of old deals, you don't own it. And they're fed up with not owning their own content. So they've formed Osborne Media House, and they came to me and asked me if I would co-host the Madhouse Chronicles, which is a chat show. It's kind of like those TV shows where you watch crazy internet videos and then we talk about it. Yeah. But if you can imagine me and Ozzy dissecting weird internet videos, it's pretty hilarious. And they let us say what we want. There's no script. So I signed up. We've done, oh my God, we did a whole season. It's all going to come out this year.
Fantastic. Going back to the Morrison project, can you tell me about Mr. Dream? Because that's something that you did with Steve and Billy, didn't you?
Yeah, I was. I By that time, I had 11 songs and I thought I had the album. And I'm looking at it and what it had become is Billy and friends, like true friends. I didn't have to ask any managers or agents. And it was glaringly obvious that the one guy that I've worked with for 16 years and is a good, good friend wasn't on it. So, and I don't like to ask Billy. He's generous enough. I'm in his band, you know. But I asked the manager, what do you think? He went, yeah, text Billy. So I texted Billy, hey, do you want to be on the album? And he said, of course. And then I called Steve, sent him a riff that I had. So he changed some stuff. And we went and recorded it with Billy. And I'm very glad that that happened because it wouldn't have felt right without Billy Idol on this album.
You still got that creative itch. You're still working on riffs. And hopefully we'll see some of those come out in future.
I got to tell you that since Crack Cocaine blew up, I'm used to being the guy that plays guitar for the name on the marquee.
Yeah.
Since Crack Cocaine became a hit, obviously my job changed and I've done a lot of what we're doing right now. And I see the demands from a record label on the guy that's got his name on the album, which I'm super grateful for. I think I need to take a break and go back into Billy Idol world, which I'm going to do. But look, we already have, and you're going to be the first person to hear this, so you'll be the first person to talk about it. We have a track. I did a song that didn't end up on the album with Cypress Hill.
Oh.
So I already have one song that isn't on the album, and we're mixing it now, and I'm loving it. So I'm obviously still creative in this collaborative world. So, yeah, sure, the chances of Morrison Project 2 are pretty high, I guess.
Well, that's fantastic to hear, Billy. And it's amazing to see the success of the Morrison Project. And
thank you.
Your endless well of creativity. So it's all the best.
Thank you for supporting, Jason.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Silence, my eyes as black as night. I
Episode, a journey unfolds in the strange.